The start of the trial for a former Minneapolis police officer charged in the death of George Floyd last year has been put on hold. Jury selection was supposed to begin today, but the judge sent potential jurors home while an appeals court reconsiders whether to reinstate a third-degree murder charge against Derek Chauvin. Chauvin is charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter. Floyd, a black man, was arrested outside a Minneapolis convenience store on Memorial Day last year. Bystander videos showed Chauvin, who's white, kneeling on Floyd's neck while Floyd was handcuffed and repeatedly saying he couldn't breathe. Floyd later died in custody. The incident sparked mass protests and violence in the Twin Cities and beyond last summer, and Minneapolis has seen new rallies leading up to the trial. Chauvin has pleaded not guilty to the charges. Three other former officers have also been charged. Their trials are scheduled for the summer. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you hoping to see in the outcome of Chauvin's trial? Does the case have meaning to you personally? What questions do you have about the case, the trial process, use of force standards, or other details? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me again. Thanks to the audience.
Before we get into the details of how this trial will work and what the judge and jury are considering, David, can you just talk about the mood in the Twin Cities after a tumultuous year right now?
Well, if we were to take a visual sort of tour of, let's say, Hennepin County in Minneapolis in particular, it looks like the city is prepared for a war. And what I mean by that, the county courthouse or the county office building where the trial is occurring, the only thing going on there right now is the trial. All the other offices, all the other trials have been relocated or moved. There is double concrete barrier walls put on the outside, as well as barbed wire, razor wire fences. It's in pretty much a lockdown mode. Most of downtown Minneapolis, the businesses are boarded up or closed. And even in St. Paul, where I am, I'm approximately, let's say, maybe 5 miles from there. A lot of businesses and so forth, the police departments, government buildings, have either told people, don't come to work, work remote on top of the pandemic, and have additional security. So it is incredibly tense right now where we also have some National Guard also patrolling at the same time. So it's a very, pins and needles, I think, is everybody would be the description we could use.
And there have been, I understand, some rallies, I believe, peaceful, David, especially at the site where George Floyd died at what's now called, I think, George Floyd Square.
You're absolutely correct. There's been peaceful protests all through the weekend. And I don't think anybody is worried about the peaceful protests in the same way that nobody was worried about the peaceful First Amendment protected protests that happened, you know, last May. What everybody's worried about, of course, is what we saw that happened in Minneapolis and unfortunately in many other communities across the country, where we had rioting, arson, destruction, and so forth. And that's what I think everybody's concerned about here, is that during the trial and perhaps once we have a verdict, what will the community reaction be as a result? And clearly all that hangs over the trial, because I think one of the big themes we have to be thinking about here is, given how well-known the events were, I'm certainly all of your listeners, or most of them, have seen that 9-minute video. We know it's circulated across the world. There's a real serious concern regarding whether it's even possible to have a fair trial, given all the exposure and how difficult it's going to be to actually get an impartial jury. It's going to be very difficult.
Talking to David Schultz from Hamline University and University of Minnesota, looking at the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, a charge for murder and manslaughter in the George Floyd case, of course, a well-known case. David, talk to us about the specific charges that are filed, and then we'll talk about this third charge that's actually delayed things for a moment.
Sure. Now, right now, there's two charges against Derek Chauvin. First of them is called second-degree manslaughter. And what you have to show to prove somebody is guilty of second-degree manslaughter, not only did they cause the death of a person, in this case, George Floyd, but they did it with, and this is the language of the law, with culpable negligence. So, and this is going to be difficult to figure out what actually it means to be culpable negligence. Was the mere placing of the knee on George Floyd's neck indication of culpable negligence, or do you have to show something else? But if you can show that there was culpable negligence and Derek Chauvin caused his death, second-degree manslaughter is punishable for up to 12 years in prison. The other charge is second-degree murder. And in this case here, it's what's called the felony murder rule. That what the felony murder rule allows is that if you're in the act of committing another felony, in this case, an assault, and somebody dies as a result, you can charge the person with felony murder. And if he were convicted under that, then it would be up to 40 years in prison. Now, the other charge, which is pending, and we just don't know what's going to happen as of right now, is that the prosecution wants to get third-degree murder reinstated. Third-degree murder was one of the original charges brought against Derek Chauvin. The judge dismissed it. And then after the Minnesota Court of Appeals about a month ago upheld the conviction of Muhammad Noor, another police officer who was convicted, what, about 2 years ago in the shooting of Justine Diamond, he was convicted of third-degree murder. And the Court of Appeals upheld his conviction. And so now the prosecution wants third-degree murder reinstated. They had a Court of Appeals decision last week that said that this district court judge should consider reinstating it. And then this morning's dispute was all about whether or not the judge had any authority to act to reinstate, hear any motions, or whether the trial could actually proceed at this point. So that's where we are in kind of limbo. It almost sounded kind of funny this morning when the judge said, well, we have an appeal now going to the Supreme Court on that Court of Appeals decision from last week. We don't know what the Court of Appeals meant in its opinion last week. And this is the part that sounded a little funny. He said, I called the Court of Appeals and left them a voicemail to see if they'd get back to me. So it sounded a little funny in terms of that. But it's where we are at this point. We're just in a holding pattern and not knowing how long it's going to take.
And now the importance of this third degree charge. There's in some cases, maybe especially involving a police officer's, juries might be reluctant to have the most serious charge. Having that third degree charge, I've seen some analysts say, gives a middle ground between the most serious charges and no conviction at all. Is that a fair way to read that possibility?
That is a very fair way to read it, is that it would give perhaps, let us say, a jury that is not sure what to do, not sure if they're convinced on those two more serious charges, might be willing to strike a deal amongst all the jurors and say, yeah, we can at least agree on a third degree murder charge. And given the fact that at least for now, one officer has already been convicted of it, Muhammad Noor, a pending appeal to Minnesota Supreme Court, that at least gives some precedent to say to a jury, yes, you can in fact convict on third degree murder. This would make the prosecution a little bit easier because as we all know, it's very difficult to successfully prosecute and get a conviction for a police officer, both because the law authorizes police officers to use force and because of the qualified immunity that police officers enjoy. So third degree might be making it easier to get a conviction.
We're talking about the upcoming trial for Derek Chauvin, the former police officer charged in the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis last year. David Schultz is with us, professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. You can join in with your thoughts and questions about the trial at 800-642-1234. Are you going to be following this? What do you want to see happen as an outcome of this trial? Do you have questions about how all of this works? The charges, police policy, jury selection, other aspects of the trial? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. We're talking about the upcoming trial for Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer charged in the death of George Floyd last May. Jury selection was supposed to begin today. The judge put it on hold while an appeals court considers whether to reinstate a third-degree murder charge against Chauvin. David Schultz is with us, professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Jeff, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Can the guest tell me why Keith Ellison, the attorney general for the state of Minnesota, why did he take this case away from the Hennepin County prosecutor? Thank you.
Good question, David.
Okay, good question. A couple of reasons here. First is that many of the community activists and many people within the African-American community in Hennepin County really did not trust Mike Freeman, who's the Hennepin County attorney, to be able to handle the matter. And so there was pressure to bring the attorney general in, Keith Ellison, to do this. Additionally, eventually, the court ruled that the Hennepin County attorney had a conflict of interest in here because some of his staff had done some investigations into this case that sort of conflicted them out from being able to handle it. But the listener raises a very good question here, is that in the state of Minnesota, the attorney general does not normally do criminal prosecution. In fact, it defends the state of Minnesota in civil matters. It defends the state or sues for, like, let's say, consumer fraud issues. It does not have a criminal prosecution unit, and it certainly doesn't have experience in terms of prosecuting police officers. They brought somebody in to help, but this is important to note here because the defense, Eric Nelson, for example, is exceedingly skilled in defending police officers. And the four officers, but particularly Derek Chauvin, have among the best police officer defense teams in the country. So this is going to be interesting to see how a attorney general whose office is relatively inexperienced in a very complex case like this is going to fare.
Thanks for that call, Jeff. And let's talk about what you mentioned earlier, the standard, the high bar for successfully prosecuting police officers for the use of force. What, according to past court rulings, what are some of the presumptions, some of the lenses that courts look at these cases through?
Well, first, of course, let's just talk about the sociology that officers are generally very credible. There's also a lot of, let's say, goodwill that jurors give to police officers. So we just have to keep that in the back of our mind, too. But first, every state in the country, including Minnesota, authorizes police officers to use force in a variety of circumstances, on top of which the U.S. Supreme Court has given police officers what's called qualified immunity. And essentially what that qualified immunity means is that when a police officer uses force, we have to judge that use of force from the perspective of what a reasonable officer would be thinking at the time that the force was used, and that we can't, this is the court's language, we can't second guess that person. And among the reasons that a Supreme Court has said that officers are authorized to use force is when they believe that either their life or the life of somebody in the public is threatened, or, among other things, if the person who they are trying to apprehend is resisting arrest. Now, not all those conditions may apply here, but put these together in terms of state law as well as qualified immunity from the Supreme Court, and the law significantly favors police officers when it comes for the use of force. So it's a very, very tough thing to do in terms of prosecuting police officers. I think I just found out recently, as looking some statistics here, that when prosecution is brought against police officers, about 40% of the time are they able to get a guilty verdict. So this is a relatively low percentage compared to, let us say, many other trials.
And stacked up against that, people will look at that video, I think, and refer to what appears to be a helpless person being knelt on, his neck being knelt on for close to 9 minutes, passersby raising concerns about his well-being. I mean, is there, just with the nature of this video, is there something here that you think is going to raise over that bar, David?
Well, the video certainly is going to be something that the prosecution keeps wanting to throw out, and show they're going to show numerous times to the jury and refer back to it. But they also are going to have an autopsy, of which they're going to have at least one expert that's going to claim that it was the knee on the neck that caused asphyxiation that eventually, you know, led to George Floyd's death, which means Derek Chauvin did cause the death of him. On the other hand, the defense is going to bring out their expert witnesses, and they're going to say that an autopsy revealed that George Floyd had COVID-19. I think one estimate said that he had about, 80 to 85% of his lungs were already full of fluid. I think, if I remember correctly, autopsy also pointed out that he had fentanyl in his system. So the defense is going to raise the argument to say that it might not have been the knee on the neck that caused the death of George Floyd. It might have been something else. Remember, defense doesn't have to prove that. All it has to do is what? Raise reasonable doubt. And if they can raise enough reasonable doubt, one that could be enough to sort of trip the case. And so the video is damaging. But certainly we also know it's not going to be the only video. Apparently there are police cams and a few other videos and witnesses that the jury is going to have to review.
In our last half a minute, David, the jury selection process delayed right now. Can you just give us a sense of what happens in that process?
Well, what's going to happen at this point? We're in a holding pattern until the Court of Appeals gets back and says, can you proceed in terms of jury selection? Can you, more importantly, consider at this point the third degree murder charge or not? I think most of us are anticipating that the Court of Appeals will get back to the district court within, I'm going to say, a day or so, because otherwise we're going to be pushing this trial out quite a bit. And you can't really impanel a jury if you don't know when the trial is going to be.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science and law at Hamline University and professor of law at the University of Minnesota. We talked to them about the upcoming trial for former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin in the death of George Floyd last year.